Hey there, podcast family. T-Bone here to talk about the 3D Dentist Digital Implant Continuum. Are you ready to start placing dental implants, but feeling a bit hesitant and or overwhelmed? I know that feeling. I've been there. Let's change that together. Imagine not just learning about dental implants in a classroom, but actually performing surgeries on real patients right here in North Carolina, guided every step of the way by our expert 3D mentors. This is dental implant learning at its best, using techniques that are safe, predictable, and confidence-boosting. They're exactly what I use in my own practice, so you know they work. Our course goes beyond clinical skills. We prepare you to successfully integrate high-demand implant services into your practice, transforming your career by attracting new patients and elevating your practice. And it doesn't end with the course. Completing our program is just the beginning of a new journey. You'll be a part of a community of confident, skilled dentists with ongoing support to ensure lasting success and growth. After all, this is about mastering a skill that can transform your career, just like it did for me. So, are you ready to take your practice to the next level? Visit www.3d-dentist.com, check out our upcoming sessions, and join us to revolutionize your practice. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now let's get back to this week's episode.
Is an area that very few new grads spend any time on. And I would argue that you spent a little time on it pre-coming to our office. Yep. And that's learning how to earn trust from patients.
We've been misled to believe that dentistry, more specifically the dental business, has to be complicated. Dentistry can be simple, and dentistry should be simple.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Dr. Tarun Agrawal here, and another episode of the Dentistry Made Simple podcast. And this week, we're going to continue our discussion on dental associates. The first week, I talked with you about when you're ready to bring an associate in and different things like that. Last week, we had an opportunity to sit down with Dr. Katie Hetrick, who is one of our associate partners in our practice. And this week, we also have our associate partner, Dr. Faisal Sheikh. Sheikh, how you doing?
All right, thank you.
How do you like being called Sheikh Shaq?
I didn't really have much to say in it.
Well, you know, I try to give everybody a little bit of a name.
Yeah, it's catchy.
Yeah, it's perfect. So, you know, it makes it easier because for the team members and stuff. And I always think it likes to lighten the mood in terms of what's going on. Well, Dr. Sheikh joined our practice probably about 6 months ago. He was referred to me by my oral surgeon friend. Faisal was an intern at his office and made an impression upon him. He was working at a DSO office that he wasn't completely happy with, and then he decided that he wanted to have a little more exposure to a quote-unquote private practice office. And so that's why we brought him in, and we kind of hopefully hit it off a little bit. I thought he'd be a great fit culturally for our practice in terms of fitting in with our team, and I loved his, I really liked his attitude and all of that, and how he shared some of the same values that I shared. So, Faisal, if you can, give us a little bit about yourself, you know, briefly.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I was born and raised in Raleigh, North Carolina. I've been wanting to be a dentist ever since high school here. Graduated at NC State. Eventually went up to NYU to finish my dental degree. And then kind of just jumped into the DSO world afterward.
Yeah, but before that, you had spent some time. When were you at Dr. Rebai's office?
So, you know, I met Dr. Rebai through my father, who he had done, you know, work on. And anytime I'd come home during the summer, during dental school, I'd literally just spend the summer there, you know, watching all the different surgeries that he did.
Were you interested in surgeries?
I was at the time, you know. It was kind of like exploring all the different fields, just, you know, exposing myself.
It's a pretty fast-paced environment, isn't it?
Yeah, very. Yeah.
And what I love about him is he's no nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, he puts you right to work. It's hey, let's get this taken care of. We got to take care of our patients. Either you cut it or you don't cut it.
Definitely. You know,
and he has an amazing track record of his of all of his interns doing amazingly well.
Oh, yeah.
I think it speaks amazing to him and his culture that he's created there in his practice.
Yeah.
Why did you choose a DSO? I don't want to use names, but why did you choose a DSO out of dental school?
Yeah, I think kind of, you know, we're getting close to graduation. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I didn't know if I wanted to do residency. I hadn't made connections at the time. This was during the pandemic with any private offices. And Aspen was just always kind of reaching out to us, kind of, you know, contacting the students at the school. And they kind of made it seem like a good offer, honestly, to start with. You know?
And they're not bad offers at all. It's you know, and then why did you want to leave the DSO space and enter the private practice space? Or did you just want to leave that DSO space and even go to another DSO space? What made you decide, you know, 6 months in to look for something different?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it really came down to I just wasn't enjoying being a dentist at all. You know, a couple months in, it was just extremely fast paced, you know, jumping patient to patient, you know, high volume kind of situation. And I was honestly just burnt out at the end of the day.
In 3 months, burnt out. That sounds crazy.
And I was like, is this normal? I mean, I can't be the only one that's burning out this quickly. And, you know, I wasn't sure what to do. And that's when I reached out to Dr. Rebai at the time.
Yeah. And he sent me your stuff. So that's awesome. That's awesome. You know, one of the things that stuck out to me in some of our conversations has been your realization that you own your operatory. Tell me, and this hits to me because I think associates oftentimes, they think it's they show up and do the work it's silver plated to them. And, and maybe in a DSO environment, it kind of is that way. I can't speak for that.
It was, yeah.
But talk to me about your because you said that. You're learning to own your operatory.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think it's easy as a new associate, you know, to come into a practice and to just expect them to kind of fill your schedule and have all these expectations. But really, at the end of the day, it's what you're diagnosing, what you're treatment planning, and you need to kind of own up to that. And, you know, the harder you work, you know, on yourself and getting better, the more you'll be able to talk to patients better and diagnose the procedures you want to do.
Would you agree that communication and diagnosis is probably the most difficult and under practiced area for young dentists?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, coming out of dental school, it's like all you learn to do is, hey, just tell the patient what they need to do. You know, nobody likes to be told what to do. And
says a husband.
And, you know, you don't get much exposure to when you kind of just go into practice and you kind of just repeat the same thing over and over unless you kind of work on it and really know how to properly talk to patients.
What has been different about communication in my practice versus a DSO practice or maybe even what your friends are telling you, some of your colleagues?
Yeah. You know, I think the biggest transition is going from, you know, setting up a patient and being like, hey, you need to do this, 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 and that versus kind of giving them their options, you know, making them make the decision. And, you know, you set them up and just show them what's going on and have them tell you what they want to do rather than kind of, you know, forcing them into this, you know, specific treatment plan.
What do you think has been the hardest thing in working in my practice or private? You don't have any other experiences in private practice, but.
I mean, I think it's always the, you know, you're always challenging us in the office. And
what do you mean by challenging? What does that mean for us?
You know, I mean.
Like, am I an ass? I mean.
No, not at all. I mean, it's more out of kind of just pushing us to be a better version of ourselves. I mean, it's.
Can you give us an example?
You know, for example, you know, going over at post-op pictures of procedures and getting actual, you know, beneficial criticism and not just kind of saying, hey, this is good and not even, you know, bothering about it. You know, listening into conversations with patients and, you know, being honest and saying, hey, you sucked in there.
Wow, why'd you use so many words? We don't have to recite the dictionary. You know, if you grew up in a brown family, and I don't know if it was like this for you, but I remember growing up, my grandfather you know, this was before the internet and stuff. Okay. We used to have this dictionary that was this big, and I'd be like, I'm bored. And he would be like, just go read the dictionaries, go read all the letter D's and come back to me. Yeah. I don't know if you had that in, you know, but that's the mentality my parents, my grandparents had. So yeah, that's what you just reminded me of there. You just recited the whole dictionary to patients.
I think it's so easy to just get caught up in, like, you know, educating the patients and, you know, thinking that we're going to impress the patients by, you know, all the knowledge that we have.
But here's what I don't understand, and I'm asking honest questions. It worked for you at your DSO.
Uh-huh.
But why isn't it working, what that same technique, why isn't that working as well in our environment?
To be quite frank, I mean, I think it's, you know, when a patient's coming in with a need and they know they want to get something done, I think it's pretty easy to kind of push them over and get them to kind of commit to a certain treatment. But when someone comes and, you know, they think everything's all fine and nothing's going on in their mouth, and it's, you know, you're telling them you need $10,000 worth of treatment, it's not as easy to kind of get them to commit to something like that.
Okay. Would you? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm going to.
No.
I think the two hardest patients that anybody deals with is the patient that has no earthly idea that there's a lot going on in their mouth, and the patient who's a complete train wreck. You know, they know there's a lot going on, but they don't even know where to start. And oftentimes I find young dentists don't know kind of where to start.
Oh, yeah.
Would you say those are the patients you struggle with?
100%. Yeah. I mean, it's intimidating as a new graduate sometimes to kind of go in there for, you know, 10, 15 minutes and expect to, you know, someone that hasn't been to the dentist in 10 years and they got a mouth full of work and to diagnose everything properly and give them a treatment plan and talk to them about it and give them, you know, a price point. That's a lot to kind of process early in my career for sure.
So how would I coach you in that particular situation? Well, talking to your friends here, how would I coach you to handle that situation?
I mean, one of the biggest things you preach is just slowing down. You know, if I feel like there's too much, then, you know, just kind of gather all the records, talk to the patient, and just see what they want to do, and invite them back for a planning visit where we can actually, you know, give them proper treatment plans and present all their options to them rather than kind of rushing everything in 10 minutes.
Okay. You know. What have you thought about the work you're seeing on recall? Has it looked pretty good?
Yeah, a little too good. I was convinced that, you know, T-Bone had finished everyone's treatment and everyone's good.
No, but that's not the truth, is it? You know, speaking of that, I think that's a misconception that people have, that patients on recall or long-time patients have very little dentistry to do. And the truth is in the practice now, what percentage of your hygiene checks do you think I do?
Less than 1%.
Less than 1%, right?
Yeah.
So you're seeing, you and Dr. Hedrick are seeing all of the recalls and doing the hygiene checks. Is there plenty of dentistry to be diagnosed?
100%. I mean, I think it's all about, you know, asking the right questions and just seeing what the patient themselves want. I mean, there's, you know, aesthetic issues that can come up or just different ones that the patients desire.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, podcast family, T-Bone here. Are you a dentist looking to elevate your practice and profits? Then pay close attention. Introducing the 3D Business Mastermind, the dental business coaching program designed for dentists who want to see real results. I've walked the path of practice ownership for nearly 25 years. I know your challenges. I felt your pain. This is your opportunity to overcome the chaos, the busyness, and the financial frustrations of owning a dental practice. Imagine a dental practice where your appointment book is highly productive, doing the dentistry you enjoy, your team is self-motivated, and your profits keep climbing. That's what the 3D Business Mastermind is all about. In this exclusive mastermind, you'll join a league of ambitious dentists driven to elevate their practices. You'll gain access to proven strategies, personalized coaching, and a community that understands your journey. So if you're ready to supercharge your dental practice and enjoy the success you deserve, visit www.3d-dentists.com and take the first step towards a brighter future in dentistry by filling out the 3D Business Mastermind application. Now, let's get to this week's episode.
Yeah. How has it been interacting with team members? Is there a difference in the team members at a DSO environment? And not all DSOs are the same. Yeah. Even from within one brand, from office to office, there's obviously different cultures. But, you know, kind of how has that been? I mean, because a lot of young grads, new grads, 1 year out of school, they're having this decision. Do I go to a DSO? Do I not go to a DSO? And look, the DSOs are the easy. I'm not going to lie to you. It's the easy route. And there's nothing wrong with it. My concern is I don't want people to get that route and think that's the only route for them without at least exploring different options. You know, there might come a time where you decide that private practice, a practice like mine, isn't the right route for you, that you like being busier and producing more and all of that. Or you may decide, you know, how did I ever work like that? Absolutely. You know, how did I work 3 chairs, hand hygiene and everything like that?
I mean, I have one of my friends, I mean, I tell him about kind of the way we do things at the office. And he's like, I could never do that. He's like, I got to be busy. I got to be doing 3 chairs at once. It's just what makes him happy.
Yeah.
You know, the DSO I was at, from my experience, you know, I saw a lot of, you know, high turnover. It was kind of like, get in there, do your work, and go home. You know, there wasn't much with the team. And, you know, ever since I joined, you know, Raleigh Dental Arts here, it's like family. You know, I come in every day to work and I'm excited to see everybody. You know, we talk to each other about things going on in our personal lives, and, you know, everyone's there to support each other in, you know, work related things and personal things. And, you know, that makes a big difference in the work environment and the attitudes of everyone.
One of the other things that you had mentioned to me, and I think you had some questions that you wanted to talk about. So why don't we pull out some of those questions and see. You know, instead of me doing all the talking here.
You know, so like I was saying earlier, one of the things, you know, coming out of dental school, it's very different than the experience in a private office. And, you know, what are some things that you recommend for a new graduate to do to supercharge their career to, you know, do the dentistry they want to do?
Well, you know, look, I'm going to sound like a broken record for most people is I think the first thing is, I think, you know, and given everybody's financial situation and stuff like that, I think the most important thing somebody can do coming out of school, honestly, is to get 2 part-time jobs, the equivalent of a full-time job, and in 2 different environments, so that you get that experience of maybe a DSO or a corporate environment or a small group environment, that experience of being in a private practice, hopefully a private practice that has a track record of having the need for an associate. You know, I think there's so much to be gained from that different experience, so that you can see the different workflows, the different pace that people work at, the different type of dentistry that they do, the different ways that they do dentistry. I think there's so much to be learned by just experiencing different things. That to me is first and foremost. Second, I think, is an area that very few new grads spend any time on. And I would argue that you spent a little time on it pre-coming to our office. Yep. And that's learning how to earn trust from patients. And to me, that's all about communication. You know, how to, what I call layering in communication, you know, instead of just rambling off a whole sentence like, this is what you got going on, this is what's going on, this is what we're going to do, and this is how much it costs. And you never give a patient a chance to digest anything, and all they remember is how much it costs, right? So instead of doing a layered approach to case acceptance and communication with patients, I think, you know, 22 years in, I still spend time learning and honing in communication. And the truth is I'm not necessarily learning new stuff. I'm rereading the same stuff. You know, it's just getting better at my craft. It's like watching movies over and over again. I think that's so important, because that level of communication, it builds the foundation of gaining trust with patients, so that it doesn't matter what dentistry you're selling. Mm-hmm. Whether you're selling basic, hey, I need a tooth taken out, and dentures, or hey, I need a complex cosmetic rehab, to me, the sales cycles or the funnel, the communication skills are essentially the same. You know, it's earning patient trust, understanding what's going on with them, what is their chief concern, what's the chief disability, how is this affecting their life, what's the benefit that they're looking for, and how do you focus in on that? You know, talk to them about budget, timeline, all of these things, and then talk about the actual dentistry. You know, so much of this is communication-based. And then another area that I think young dentists fall into the trap, and you're to a certain degree not that different, is you're not willing to take risks on CE. You're going to have to spend some money. You know, it blows my mind that we're willing to come out of school with $400,000 in debt, but then we're not willing to spend 10, 15 grand a year to supercharge our career. And the truth is dental school dentistry gets you about 6 to 9 months out of dental school. After that, you've got your speed, you're doing the dentistry that you've learned how to do. And then what really will hold your career back in terms of earning potential, satisfaction, all of those things, is really about adding new procedures and new ways of doing things to your repertoire. And that honestly only comes from great education. I happen to believe the best way is in-person education. That's my belief. So those are the kind of the three things I think that new grads really need to hone in on to get their career to a great level.
Oh yeah, I remember the first time T-Bone called me, and we were just getting to know each other. I just remember him being very blunt, very honest with me, and he was asking what kind of dentistry I want to do, what I'm looking for in an office, and I was telling him I'd like to kind of do some more cosmetic work, possibly some surgery. And the first thing he asked me is, what CEs have you signed up for, to get better at these things? And I remember just stuttering. I mean, I didn't really think that far ahead. Fast forward almost, 6 months now, I've taken multiple in-person CE courses. Yes, they are expensive, but I think something about being in person is much different, being able to personally interact with, so many great dentists and meeting other people, smart, like-minded people in the class, and kind of just bouncing ideas off each other and seeing what's out there. Really.
And learning new perspectives. Mm-hmm. There's so much to be learned when you just talk to people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing to type behind the keyboard. It's another thing to interact with somebody face to face. And I believe you have an amazing CE program lined up soon. We're doing a live patient CE.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that.
So I'm doing the 3D dentist.
No. I think you're doing the
live
one. The cosmetic one.
Well, I'm pertaining to cosmetics. I'm setting up to take the APA course, APA Rosenthal course. It's not the APA course, it's the Rosenthal.
I don't know.
In New York City, it's a two-part live program where we actually do a full cosmetic case on a patient. I'm really looking forward to that this spring.
Yeah, I think, I jokingly tell people that I tell good associates that you probably need to spend 20 grand your first year if you want to be successful with me. And I know it's a lot of money, but honestly, we make money. At the end of the day, we make money and it'll, for someone like you, I look back in my shoes and I say, God, those live patient courses I took my first year out. I mean, I'm still doing that dentistry today. Those skills, that confidence, that power it gave me. It's 22 years of return on investment, right?
Yep.
And I remember so well, and you'll see it when you go to your program, is all the older dentists in the area said, I wish I did this, that were in the program. I wish I did this when I was your age. I wish I had the foresight to do this. And there truly is, it's amazing. It's really amazing the power of great CE and great leadership and mentorship and everything like that.
Go ahead. I went to the Spear course this last June, and everyone there was so surprised that I'm taking a CE course like this so early on. So I think it's definitely a common trend for people to put it off later into their careers.
Or the problem is, I think a lot of people say, I can learn that online. And so there's some truth to that. There's a lot of stuff I can learn online, but there's something about, I don't think when you do online learning, and look, 3D dentists, we have online training. Okay, if you want to buy some, great. But I think you're never really engaged in it. You're doing it in short spurts. You got life coming at you. You got a wife. You got a kid. You got a husband coming at you. You got this phone call, that phone call. I find that when I go somewhere, I'm able to kind of zone all that out, and I really focus in on what I'm there for. What other questions you got?
So obviously things have changed a lot since you first started practicing. What are some of the newer technology trends that you're seeing you think people should kind of maybe get into?
Yeah. Well, you know, for me, the answer is the same as it was 15 years ago. It's all digital. Okay. Digital dentistry is 15, 20 plus years old. But for me, digital dentistry has been the driving force behind my personal and professional growth. I have taken whatever piece of technology that we've implemented in the practice, and I've dove in deep on it. And I've always followed that. Like, let's take, for example, a digital impression scanner. Most of you might think, oh, that's just a way to replace PBS. I don't look at it that way. I look at it as that's a way to communicate with patients. That's a way to do smile mock-ups. That's a way to make night guards. That's a way to make whitening trays. That's a way to make surgical guides. That's a way to fabricate partials and flippers and Essex devices. You know, I think of those things as the gateway to the dentistry I want to do. And so to me, it's about learning how to leverage technology to do more procedures, not just buy a fancy tool.
Yeah.
And hopefully you've seen that in the practice, right?
Yeah. You talk a lot about, you know, getting better at communication. Mm-hmm. How do you recommend, you know, a new graduate to work on that?
Practice. You know, honestly, it's about getting uncomfortable. Talk to yourself in the mirror. Talk to your hygienist. Talk to your team members. We have great training here at 3D Dentist with the business boot camp. It's all about communication and case acceptance. Paul Hunley has been a great mentor of mine. He has amazing online training. In fact, I just gave you access to it today. I told you to buy and read the book. Hopefully you've been reading the book
twice,
you know, and, you know, all those things kind of set a foundation and you reread it and redo it. And honestly, if I were to be honest with everybody, is that's all I've worked on for communication is the same book for 22 years. I literally got that book year two or year three into practice, and I read that same book over and over again, and I've just focused on the nuances. And maybe the words change as my confidence changes, the dentistry changes as my procedures change. But people are people at the end of the day. The people today are no different than they were 15, 20 years ago. And,
absolutely.
And it's really all about trust, and how you earn that trust with patients is really so critically important to the longevity and the type of dentistry that you do.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in this day and age, social media is so powerful, and you see kind of everyone hopping on to make, you know, make their dental accounts and office accounts. How important do you think?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, podcast family. T-Bone here, bringing you our newest live patient implant training, Full Arch Express. For dentists already placing implants and ready to level up and continue building their implant practice, this is the golden ticket. We're diving deep into full arch implants, the hottest game changer in implant dentistry. In this program, we tackle both overdentures and all-on-X fixed hybrids, mastering techniques that are essential for modern, comprehensive dental care. It's about getting your hands on the tools and techniques that will replace the doubt and fear with confidence and predictability. Here's the kicker. There's live patient training right here in North Carolina. You're not just learning theories. You're in the operatory doing real work on real patient from start to finish, guided one-on-one by our expert 3D mentors. You'll learn the nuances of each approach, ensuring you can cater to a wide range of patients to maximize revenue. Speaking of revenue, with me, you know it's not just about the clinical skills. We're bringing business into this aspect too, teaching you how to integrate these advanced services profitably into your practice. So are you ready to rise up to the top in implant dentistry? Join us at the Full Arch Express. This isn't just another course, it's a career-defining leap. Head to www.3ddentist.com to enroll in our next session. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now, back to this week's episode.
I think it's incredibly important. I think social media is a double-edged sword. So let's talk about the bad sword part of it. I think the bad sword part of it is that it can make you feel horrible about your work because I love the guys, the Style Italiano group. I can't look at it and follow it anymore because every time I look at their work, I'm like, my work sucks. you know, and I just don't have that skill level in my hands. And quite frankly, I don't have that desire to do that level of dentistry. And I'm not trying to attract patients who are looking for that level of dentistry. In fact, when I get patients that are looking for that level of dentistry, I refer them out. I just don't want to do it. So, you know, that's important. That's the negative part of social media. The other negative part is everybody has this pissing contest. Oh, I'm doing this. I'm doing that. Look at me. Look at that. And nobody ever talks about, or very rarely do people talk about their faults and their troubles and things like that. And I think that's often missed. And I think your generation especially really suffers from that, is this, this FOMO, fear of missing out, and this less than, you know, if I'm not doing this. But the great thing about social media is that it opens up the world to be your patients. You know, I look at dentists like my friend Tejas Patel in Austin, Grant Olson in Springfield, and their patients are all over the United States. Look at Michael Apo, his patients are all over the world. And that doesn't exist without social media. And social media to me, and maybe this is just my way of looking at it, it's all about business to me. Okay. I like to think I have real world friends that I can talk to. But social media to me is about how do I leverage this to improve my business? And for me, it's my dentist to dentist business. Earlier in my career, it was more my dentist to patient business. And one of the things I try to instill in Shake and Dr. Hetrick is you got to build your own brand. You know, it can't all be about Raleigh Dental Arts. You know, because God willing, he stays and it's a good fit and all of those things. But, you know, the reality is he's probably going to be on his own at some point in time. And so I don't want you to be under the brand Raleigh Dental Arts. I want you to develop the brand Faisal Shake. And so to me, it's a delicate balance between putting yourself out there as the expert and then also promoting the practice that you work in. And to me, they go hand in hand. And so I always believe that you gotta tell the world what you do, not in this braggadocious way, but you got to show them what you're doing. What is, you know, I'm on you all the time. Take pictures of your work, put it out there. Take pictures of failings. Oh, I'm not doing fancy stuff. No problem. You know, 80% of our patients don't need fancy stuff. You know, just put pictures of fillings out there. Put pictures of x-rays of crowns, x-rays of root canals. You know, talk about why this tooth needed a root canal. Become the expert. Become the go-to information person in your market. And what you'll find with social media is that your market just expands and expands and expands and expands. It's really limitless what it can do. Now, look, it's 1 in 10,000 that develop that level of brand with social media, but there's nothing to say it can't be you. And the real difference is some people just stuck to it and went through the steps. You know, they put the time and effort in. So I'm a big believer in building a brand. You know, my career is all about having built a brand, you know, just share it. And that's all I've done all my career is to share what it is I'm doing.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. I feel like, you know, talking to a lot of my friends, you know, on social media, it's so easy to see what everyone else is doing and feel like you're falling behind and I'm not doing this good of work. And like you said, I think it'd be, you know, a good change to see people talk about, you know, the hardships and kind of use it to help each other grow.
And I think also patients love seeing that. Yeah, I think patients love seeing a human part of a person, right? That, hey, you're not this braggadocious, perfect person, that you do make mistakes. You do have a heart. Yep. You know, you do have a soul to you. You know, I think that's so, so important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's switch back to kind of associateship. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just as important as it is for, you know, an associate to put in the work to succeed in an office, you know, what are some things that a business owner can do to kind of ensure that the associate can kind of transition easily and be successful in their practice?
Yeah, I think the first thing that somebody can do is what I call a clinical success path. And that's lay out what are the things that you need to be able to do that best support the practice. Okay. And number two, I think a good boss, owner, whatever you want to call it. I don't like to think of myself as those things. Colleague is what I like to think of myself as. Is kind of empower you with the team. You know, kind of put you on a level playing field that you're here. This is your area of expertise within the practice. And that our intention is to grow that area of expertise. I think the other thing that one can do is I think it's incumbent on the owner to feed the associate a little bit of dentistry. So that way the associate has some level of schedule. They're making some money, that they're earning their keep to a certain degree. And I think it's got to be that. And selfishly, I believe that, because what that does is it frees me up to do the dentistry I want to do and bring in business for the type of dentistry I want to do. You know, the truth is if I relied on Shake to grow my business, we would grow at a different rate than if we relied on me to get out there and grow my business. So to me, as an associate, it's partly about freeing my time up to grow at an accelerated rate. I would say those are some of the things. And I'd like to turn the question on you. You know, what have we done well and what have we not done well for you to succeed at our practice? Because we're not doing as good as we'd like to do. That I know.
Yeah.
So where have we faltered and where have we done well?
Yeah. You know, one of the first things that I appreciated was, you know, being upfront about things and being honest. I mean, when I first started, you did tell me that you're probably going to end up doing a lot of the feelings I don't want to do, a lot of the work I don't want to do. And I said, you know, okay, you know, you got to start somewhere. And
I love that attitude, by the way, because to me, that's an attitude most people don't have these days. And that's, you got to put the time in.
Yeah.
Now, you don't have to put the 5 to 7 years I put in, because you can accelerate that. But you got to put some time in, and you got to have that attitude of, we serve the practice first.
Yeah.
We don't serve myself first. We serve the practice first.
Yeah.
Because don't get me wrong, I'll get in and do a filling in the crown if that's what it takes to keep the doors open.
Yeah. I think, you know, so many people, you know, don't want to do these procedures and want to immediately jump into the harder case, or not even harder cases, but
sexier.
Yeah. Implants and cosmetics. But, you know, those basic cases are what feed the practice, and if you're not good at them, you can't just jump up to those.
I don't see how you can be good at a veneer if you can't do a class 2 composite.
No.
I just don't. I mean, there's bonding protocols, there's isolation protocols. You know, there's just, you know, a good margin versus not a good margin. I just don't see how. I don't see how you can skip over. You can fast forward, but I don't think how you can skip over some of those things.
And I argue some of that stuff is harder than other procedures. I mean, I'm sure you probably would rather do an implant quicker than you do a filling.
Yeah, but my implant patients usually complain more than my filling patients.
Yeah.
Or they have higher needs and expectations. There's a higher failure rate with implants than, you know, or I should say a higher failure rate. The failures are more catastrophic with an implant versus a filling and things like that. So,
And one of the other things, you know, we kind of sat together and we talked about our goals, you know. I think it's important to set goals for every 6 months, a year. That way you're actively working towards something. You know, we have a whiteboard in the office, and we wrote down the four main areas that we're going to focus on for the next year. And
do you remember what those are for you?
Yeah. Coming in, I wasn't using Sarah as often, so that was something I've transitioned to using.
Yeah, because it's not a go-to for the office.
Yeah.
Single visit dentist.
Yeah. And I don't think I'd ever switch back. you know, we learned a lot more. I learned a lot more conservative, you know, preps with Sarah, which I think is amazing. You know, doing endo, being better at it, more efficient. Composites, you know, personally, I struggle to do. I hold myself to a high degree, so I mean, doing really good composites, I think it's pretty difficult, and it takes some time to get it right. Communication,
yeah,
obviously.
Most importantly. I have learned that over time, that communication is, I can't stress it enough. I feel like a broken record because I talk about it all the time. That communication is the key to success in dentistry.
Yeah.
At least building a broad range of dental procedures that you can do.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing I learned with communication is that patients don't care what you do to them. They don't want to know what the procedures are. They just want to know how long it's going to take and how much it's going to cost.
Yeah. And do they trust you? Yeah. It's time for your money, right?
Yeah.
How long is it going to take? Am I going to hurt? And how much is this going to set me back?
Yeah.
Right? You know, and so really it's getting yes to those barriers. Then you can do, they don't care. Like, patients don't know the difference in the composite and the crown and all of these things. They just, you know, they know the crown costs more than the composite. They don't really know. I mean, honestly, it's the same procedure. It's just a different material, a different outcome, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just that. Anything else on mine? Shake Shack?
Let's see if you got any more questions.
Well, here's what I'll say while you're reading that. I think you're on an amazing track. I think you're taking the right seed. I'm holding you accountable to that. You've got a great head on your shoulders. One of the things that I loved, made me very comfortable in bringing you into the office was I asked you to send me pictures of your work and x-rays of your work and digital impressions of your work before you came. So I can give you feedback on this is how we would do this differently. Or, hey, we can smooth this up. Or see how an all-ceramic prep should be a little bit more rounded than that. Or, you know, look at your end notes. You know, it could be a little bit differently this way or that way. And really, and those aren't trying to nitpick. They're just trying to be constructive.
Absolutely.
You know, some people call it critical or criticism. I call it constructive feedback. Because, you know, I want to be surrounded by people that want to work at the highest level. That doesn't mean the highest level. It just means a high level. You know, where you're constantly seeking to improve and get better. And then when you find that you're not seeking to improve and get better, that you find something new to move on to, right? New procedures for me, or whatever it may be.
And I think we both came from similar raisings to where nothing was ever good enough.
Yeah. The 90, I tell everybody the story of my 97 at the parent teacher conference, and my dad's like, where do we get the other 3 points from? You know, how do we make it 100? You know, so, yeah. Well, Shane, I think you're going to do great things.
Thank you.
And we're excited to have you in the office. I know the team loves you, and I know we've got some work to do, and we're going to get there, and we're going to spend some more time together. Yeah, you know, the one thing I would, that we didn't touch on is a good mentor-mentee relationship. And I think too often associates put too much on the shoes of the mentor. And selfishly, I think more of it needs to go to the mentee. And the mentor, myself in this case, we have to make it clear that we want to help. That we it can't be just words that we're available. It's gotta have meaning to it. And then on the mentee side of things, I think you gotta communicate in a way that works. Because the truth is it's hard to communicate 8 to 5. Because we have our own schedules, we have our own patients, we don't necessarily, you know, and we don't sit in our office anymore, so we don't necessarily have free time where all this and that involves scheduling time, that involves making time, that involves coming in early, staying late, that involves a digital level of communication, whether it's text messaging or FaceTiming or things like that. And I think those are important things. And also, you have to demand the level of mentorship that you want. And if you're not getting it, in my opinion, it's your fault for either not asking for it or staying in a place where you're not getting it. And so, you know, the truth is, as associates, generally speaking, there are many jobs out there, many opportunities. There's nothing wrong in kind of, you know, getting your feel of what's going on out there so that you can find your right place in this world and in this career, because dentistry should be an amazing profession. It should be fun. It should be financially rewarding. It should be personally satisfying that you continuously grow. And it hurts me to hear that you were feeling burned out so quickly into dentistry. And it doesn't have to be that way. So there are many different ways to skin a cat, and dentistry, unlike anything else I've experienced, really gives you that opportunity.
Yeah.
So Shake, thank you for joining us. And how can people get in touch with you?
I have my social media account, just Faisal.Shake, you know, DDS, it's on Instagram. And,
you have an email?
Email, yeah. It's drs@RaleighDentalArts.com.
Perfect. Yeah, you gotta be a little better at that. Tell people how to get in touch with you, man. Come on. Everybody, thank you for tuning in this week, and we look forward to having you back on the Dentistry Made Simple podcast. And if we can help you, a 3D dentist, help you change your life, change your practice, grow your communication skills, gain your case acceptance, grow your clinical skill set, really fine-tune your practice. It's what we love to do and what we do amazing at. And there's something magical here about the 3D retreat. So I would love to welcome you to come visit us here in Raleigh, North Carolina. Have a great week, everybody.